Do you love and hate the hospitality industry? Then you are in the right spot. Join your hosts, Kyle and Sarah, Sean Walsheth, and Jensen Cummings as they talk shop and give real insights into the latest restaurant news and most pressing issues facing hospitality professionals today. Welcome in to the Restaurant Idea Factory.
Hey, welcome into Restaurant Idea Factory. That's Sean down there. That's Kyle. I'm Jensen. What are we at, guys? June 14th? Wednesday, June 14th. We're coming at you a little bit early, 10 a.m. Eastern time, because our man Sean is actually 5 p.m.
Happy hour time.
Happy hour time, right? In the village. So we're going to hear a little bit from the village, but today is Riff 25. We're talking about pizza robot fails, ChatGPT menu testing, and remote work effects on restaurants. All right, man, tell us, Sean, you're in the village. What's the name of the village?
The name of the village, so it's a village just outside of Vratsa. It's called Nefela. But Vratsa is the town where my wife is born, is a town of about 100,000 people. The closest similarity would be Boulder, Colorado.
100,000 people, that's a decent size. That's a city almost, right?
That's a city. Yeah, but we're outside of the city in the village.
Gotcha. What's the language situation there? Do a lot of people speak English? Or probably not. I know
what's the language situation.
I mean, for you. Speaks English. She's your translator? Okay.
She's my translator. And my son now. My son is fluent in Bulgarian too. So.
Oh, you don't want that, man. You gotta get on.
What about you? You know enough words to understand.
I know enough to understand, but I can't speak it. Yeah. I know when they're talking shit about me.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they don't need words for that. You see the side eye and stuff that when they're like, gringo doesn't speak Bulgarian. God, that reminds me when I was a kid, my dad, like 6'5", American dude, and there's tiny little kid translating for him in Germany. Same type of thing. People are like, why can't you speak English? What kid does it for me? What do you mean?
Yeah.
That's Google good. Translate. Uh-huh. All right, tell us. What's something that you've learned out there about restaurants or hospitality or something that's very different than the States that people in the States need to be paying attention to, need to know about, need to be doing?
I don't know about need to be doing, but I'll give you a cultural difference. A cultural difference. There we go. They hate ice.
What?
They hate cold drinks. They hate ice.
Yeah, I always get made fun of for that, for putting ice in sodas, stuff like that.
They don't want ice in sodas, ice in cocktails, just no ice.
It's all like cellar temperature.
If you want ice, like, you might as well be an alien, because they're not down. Because the ice is going to get you cold. Plus, the ice, like, on the cocktail side, they feel like the establishment is screwing them over by putting ice. That,
right?
They are.
Yeah. You've seen that where they take the ice out of the drink that's like halfway full.
Adding ice.
That's my grandfather used to do that with but like draft sodas. Don't no ice. No ice. But I knew you used to do that from Poland.
Still warm beer. My dad does that.
No ice?
Yeah, no ice.
I can't stand it. I need extra ice.
Yeah. Extra ice. I want edible ice, actually.
If the ice doesn't come up above the rim of the glass, what the fuck are we even doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you go no ice for the month that you're in Bulgaria or what?
I try to get ice. I try to get cold drinks. It's, you know.
You're like more, sneaking more, ice.
More warm drink. Yeah.
You've got to go to the back of the restaurant where they have the tiny little bucket of ice and make drinks with the staff because he doesn't want the family to make fun of him.
Yeah, we literally brought a Yeti cooler last year so that we could have cold stuff because nothing gets cold over here. So like if we want it cold, then we can put it in the Yeti, but then we have to actually like go and make ice or like find the ice, the black market ice guy. You got some
and ice. And it's going to spread around the village. There's some.
You got it. The Americans need some ice.
It could be like Kristoff from Frozen and start an ice business there, man.
Wouldn't do well here.
Ice
wouldn't do well here.
Maybe they're ready for it. Maybe everybody secretly really wants ice and everything. And it's just
everyone here has a grandmother who tells them that ice is the devil.
And the devil?
It'll make you sick, right? They say like
it'll make you sick.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. I've heard that before.
Yep. Oh, that's amazing.
So there you go. Now you learned something about Eastern Europe, or at least Bulgaria. I'm not sure.
I knew a Polish guy used to drink warm beer. Yeah. He just didn't care. I don't have to be cold.
They all know it. The Germans, it's all cellar temperature. Now the cellars are cold, but it's not cold beer. The mountains are not turning blue on that Coors Light can, that's for sure, with the beer that they drink too. But also their stuff's just different. Like even their Coca-Colas and things like that are very, very different. They're nowhere near as sweet. And you kind of need all that ice to cut through how ridiculously sweet it is, because you can feel the syrup when it's not ice cold. So I feel that there. All right, everyone, there you go. You travel to Eastern Europe. Do not expect your drinks on the rocks. No chance of that. All right, let's get into this. Let's start. Let's go from ice all the way to robots. Let's talk a little TikTok. Saw this video where, you know, we've been talking about ChatGPT a lot. We've been talking about AI. We've been talking about robot, automated response, all these different things. I think this was a great play to either use ChatGPT potentially for developing menu items or just for some great content. So let's see what Zuku Sushi did with a little ChatGPT.
I'm excited to introduce you to the first ever sushi roll created by artificial intelligence.
More like artificial idiocy.
What's that?
I said, this is dumb. Robots trying to take my job.
Okay, from the top. We asked ChatGPT to come up with the perfect sushi roll, and we think it came up with something truly cutting edge.
Cutting edge? More like cutting corners.
But before we let it do a sushi roll, we asked it to come up with a simple sauce recipe. What do you think?
This is spicy mayo.
What do you mean?
This is freaking literally just spicy mayo.
Once we were confident it mastered the sauce, we asked it to come up with a simple sushi recipe. Hey, Chung, try this test roll we asked ChatGPT to make.
Are you guys kidding me? Is this another April Fool's?
No, check it out. Jessica loved it.
It's a California roll.
No, you haven't even tried it. Yeah, eat it.
It's a California roll. You guys are kidding. You are all crazy.
So, it's with great pleasure that I introduce you to this algorithmically perfect sushi roll, the Tampa Treasure Roll. And the best part is, you get to be the judge. For a limited time, you can come try this spicy software roll.
Hey, can I order the Tampa Treasure Roll?
Really? Robots taking our jobs? This is really happening. It's so dumb. Sure, whatever you want.
Brilliant.
I like that idea.
It's a great idea. Look, if the sushi roll is no good, the content can be absolute fire. I like the algorithmically perfect sushi roll, huh?
Definitely.
So, ChatGPT menu development. Kyle, you kick us off here, because I remember you had ChatGPT make a couple brunch menus, I remember, early on. So,
yeah.
Is ChatGPT in the menu development game?
You know, I just think it always goes back to me, like what somebody told me, though. Some guy was pushing back against artificial intelligence, and his job was like commercial real estate, as a broker, I think. But still, it was like, if a machine had as much information and as much knowledge as you, do you think it could make something better, as good, or worse than you? And you know, there are a lot of factors there, but you've worked with people, right? Like, you're like, I will take a robot to give me some ideas over this dude. So yeah, for sure. I think it can happen. It depends on who you're going up against. I'm sure if it's going up against, you know, some great sushi chef, it's not going to,
Morimoto is not getting taken down by ChatGPT.
No, I think that's a good point, right? Like, you're not going to get taken down at that level by robot just yet. Anyway.
Oh, I remember menu development was piles of cookbooks the table and a group of chefs combing through them and highlighting them and stuff. So, I mean, that's exactly what that is. What ChatGPT basically just can highlight the items that give you the foundation to then riff on. That we've already done that. We've used cookbooks for that for generations. So,
the professional chef, remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
I think I have it right here. That book was everything. But just take that book and put it into the internet.
That book is for sure on there. This was our Bible in culinary school and beyond. Sean was the professional cooking or on cooking. That's why we all made the same bullshit dishes for a decade coming out of like the 2000s. So, what about you guys? Have you made any barbecue sauce or anything with ChatGPT yet?
No, but this video, first of all, I'm a fan. I don't know who they are, but what was it?
Zuku Sushi, they're Florida-based. I think they had a couple mid-Atlantic as well. Z-U-K-K-U. Zuku Sushi.
Z-U-K-K-U.
Oh, there it is. James Beard's American Cookery. Do I have any cookbooks here? Here, I'll show you one of the cookbooks. Pa-dow!
That's a great one.
Signed by Thomas Keller.
Oh, wow.
We got this on our anniversary when we went to the French Laundry. Mm-hmm.
So anybody that's listening to this, go follow Zuku Sushi on TikTok.
100.
If they didn't win you over with the video they made, their tagline is, "We haven't told the boss about our page yet. Shh, yeah. Reveal at 10K, ?
It's so
follow.
Good.
Smart.
Absolute follow. Yes. You guys are fantastic. Keep it up. More sketch comedy.
Yeah, they're hacking culture 1,000%.
Yes.
Really, really well done by Zuku Sushi for sure.
They're in Tampa, they said?
Tampa. Yeah, Zuku Sushi, Tampa.
Yeah, I think that location, I think they have a few in Florida and maybe saw one in North Carolina or somewhere else up the coast a little bit. But yeah, they're Florida-based. I mean, it's brilliant. You know, it allows you the opportunity to, hey, maybe we come up with something interesting. Maybe we don't. Maybe it allows us the opportunity to have, again, that foundation of highlighted cookbook recipes that get the creative juices flowing. Because to, you know, chef's point there, they just made spicy aioli, spicy mayo. It just made a California roll, right? And then it made the spicy Tampa roll from there. But, you know, algorithmically perfect. I don't know about that. Getting the creative juices flowing, which I've talked about multiple times, like a great way to have a sounding board.
For sure.
To get bad ideas out of the way quickly. Sometimes that's as helpful as good ideas is eliminating, process of elimination. So I like that from a creative side. But the content side, it's so good. I mean, it's just a capture over create mindset. We're already pumping something into ChatGPT. Who cares what comes out of it? What comes out of it is potentially content gold. 100%. Oh, yeah. Now, Sean's following them. Kyle's following them. I'm following them. We're going to repost something. We're going to duet something. Like, it's gonna have that amplification because what? They did what everyone's doing, putting shit in ChatGPT and going, what the fuck is coming out the other end?
Yeah, but yeah, like, look at the content that it's creating. This is like pretty perfect, I think, for restaurant content. I'm going to reach out to them for expansion because this is the type of stuff.
Hey, look at that. There you go. They're coming to New York.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. I mean, they are. You can tell what the brand is just by looking at their content. You know, to convey that to landlords, like 3 years ago, you had to send a PDF booklet with a menu or pointing to the website. Completely different story now.
Yeah, Instagram, TikTok are like portfolios now for you know, for artists and restaurants looking at it the same way. 100%. So. I think also the fact that they're leaning into it, so they not only have the content side, but imagine them selling that role. Hey, you guys want to try the role that ChatGPT came up with? People are going to buy that. They just are, because people are so curious about what the hell kind of role an AI robot would come up with. So you have that leverage on the marketing side, on the sales side. You know, you could absolutely sell a ton of those roles just by that. And it's interesting because we do that with, you know, we've joked about stunt food type stuff on here. You know, we're trying to cut through the noise and get some attention for the food. That could be a pretty simple, humble role, but the fact that ChatGPT came up with it, you know, that could sell 5,000 of them.
Hey, man, worth a shot.
Now you need AI with, you know, Clear Cogs or one of those other things to tell me if this is a profitable sushi roll, because then if ChatGPT can make a slightly interesting role, interesting enough that people are going to buy it, that you can make content out of it, and it helped you from the conception of it make it financially viable. I think I like it.
But that's the thing with this AI stuff. You have to train it. Like I think the expectation, correct, like a lot of people think, is like you're just going to be able to plop something in there. It's going to spit out the right answer. It only can respond to what you're giving it. So yeah, I've seen some messing around with some stuff on there. You can get what you're looking for from it, but it just takes some tweaking. I think restaurants can definitely use this for inspiration. Cocktails, training programs.
Yeah. Yeah, it might take 2, 5, 6, 10 prompts down the same rabbit hole to get something that you think is, you know, unique, interesting, whatever. So, yep. All right. Zuku Sushi, you get daps from us. 100% way to go. And yeah, anybody out there, follow Zuku Sushi. Please give us more ChatGPT content. We're here for it. All right. From one kind of robot to the next kind of robot, let's talk robotic revelation. This from The Spoon, Michael Wolf. We have 4 lessons from the demise of Zoom. Zoom, the company famous mostly for raising a whole bunch of money for its pizza robot and cook on the road food truck concept, has shut down. This comes after burning through $450 million to build a food automation and delivery tech business. The company then pivoted to a completely different business in sustainable packaging. All right. Have you guys followed Zoom at all? And or know what they've been up to?
I don't know what they've been up to. I know that's for something's changed on it, though. Like some sort of functionality on my side has changed that's been like frustrating. Just like, I'm booking Zooms, like 3 Zooms a day.
Not Zoom. Zoom. The pizza concept. He's in Bulgaria, too, with you, bro.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Zume. No. the kid who didn't do the.
Tell me more about your Zoom problem. I want to hear about your Zoom.
Since you asked, I'll tell you.
Forget about the delivery robot. Yeah. I want to hear about Kyle's Zoom problem.
Everybody has Zoom real pain in the ass. Also,
if you want to know, I'll tell you. It's a real pain in the ass. Zoom.
I want to hear. Let me know about your Zoom problem, please.
Yeah, it's a scheduling issue.
Do you use Calendly,
Sean? I appreciate you asking. Yeah, it's just a lot more difficult to schedule. So,
With Calendly. Or with Zoom?
With Zoom.
What is difficult about the scheduling? Explain it.
It says that you can invite from Zoom, but you can't. Nobody ever gets the invitation. So, And then, like, if you're signed in somewhere, you got to sign out somewhere else. It's not easy over here, bro.
Are you going from your phone or from a laptop?
No, from my computer.
From your computer. And these are client calls that you're going on?
It's Sean.
Client and prospect, yeah.
He's not going to let you off the hook here, Kyle.
Well, are you setting up the calendar invite, or you're ad-libbing as you go? Like, oh, hey, I forgot to add this guy, so I got to add him.
No, it just doesn't.
Maybe I should add him.
No, it's more often the case. Like, I'm like waiting for them, and then they said, hey, I didn't get the invite. I'm like, what the fuck? So now I got to go back and do it. So I just stopped using it their way.
People are liars.
What?
Do you think people are liars?
That's the excuse either for they, why they're 5 minutes late.
Either they all of a sudden became liars, or Zoom fucked something up. One or the other.
Okay. Now that we understand the problems with Zoom, one of 2 things might have happened. Number 1, bad branding to have the same name as Zoom, or maybe it's Zoomy. Maybe Zoom-A.
I don't know. Maybe
I pronounced it incorrectly. But they went into pizza robots. They basically wanted to have you order a pizza and it's cooking on the way, right? And so Domino's has been working in this space a little bit to have these autonomous driving, self-driving vehicles. And then inside those vehicles, they have these decks that'll cook the pizza while it's on the way. Zoom took that.
How many people are staffing these vehicles?
Supposedly with the Domino's pizza ones, 0. They slide the pizza into the oven, it drives itself. That was the conception of Domino's. So there's several pizza places that were kind of in that space of how do we automate that. My guess is with that drive to that there's 2 people, and it's a good question. I don't know that one driving and one cooking the pizzas in these automated spots or building the pizza that then the robot is actually cooking in these. But yeah, there is a ton of money for this, $450 million. But then the bizarro thing is they realized, I guess, that this concept was garbage, and they went into sustainable packaging. They started to look at the packaging of the pizza and stuff and started to develop that. So investors were like freaking out, like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not a small pivot. That's a complete 180 from the business that we were doing. And now they've completely shut down.
That didn't work out as planned.
So what was the return on the investment?
Donut. Womp, womp. A big old donut. Yeah, they burned through this quick. I mean, this was in the last
that last
5 years. Yeah.
Why did they raise $450 million?
That's what I'm saying, dude.
Like, you gotta have, like, what is in that deck? Like, Can we see? That would be a great, that would be great content, is to see right? all the businesses that go out of business, to have them publish the fundraising decks that they use.
But have you seen the there is a website that has published like decks of companies that have gone successful?
Oh, really?
What, yeah. What
is that? Oh, it. Yeah. What's that site? Find that.
I'll send you a Zoom link and we can take a look at it together.
Get some.
I don't know where I saw, but no, but they're remarkably simple. But I always say the same thing, particularly with like, I don't know if you got, but like around here, I know guys who open up restaurant concepts and they close and they open up another one and then it closes. I'm like, yeah. Who keeps investing in this
who
guy?
Keeps there's guys like that in San Diego.
There was a guy.
Literally, there is a celebrity chef in San Diego that opens a restaurant every 3 years and it closes. It's like the hottest restaurant in town and then it's the closed restaurant. And you're like,
yeah.
Come on.
Exactly. Mm. That's
like what?
Yeah. And there's a guy I spoke to, I coached with, and he was like, we're talking about restaurants, just kind of when I first met him. And he's like, yeah, man, I've invested $600,000 into a restaurant here, which I knew the space. I'm like, where the fuck did $600,000 go into that space? He's like, yeah, I lost it all. I'm like, what? Like, what did that guy look like? How? What? Yeah. What did that? I want to see that deck, you know, like crazy.
Well, similarly, you see those locations from the real estate side that have been 7 different restaurants in the last 10 years. And you say the same thing. Who is thinking that they now have the secret sauce to make a better concept in there after the 7th one has failed in the last 10 years? And who's investing into these again and again? You seeing that on that side? What's the conversation from a real estate standpoint? You're like, this, you know, is this location fucking cursed? Or you just think it's everybody's gotten the formula wrong?
You know what? I think the cursed thing is like there's something inherently wrong with either the property or the landlord or the location. There's not cursed by anybody other than just people choosing bad real estate, or, you know, the landlord could not allow certain types of concepts. So then he, you know, or he doesn't. There's so much that goes into like one-off mom and pop type landlord dynamics that they, you know, they'll take anybody. So it could look good on the outside, but behind it, there could be the financials don't stand up. Or so I think the curse thing is it's definitely out there as being
not the curse of the Bambino coming to reap.
That shit was real, Boston. You guys remember that?
Kyle, do you have like a face cut out of Ben Affleck behind you?
No, that's my brother-in-law.
Sean, Kyle's just giving us so much comedy gold today. What is that?
By the way, if you just said that he looked like Ben Affleck, we'll make his like.
I just saw the eyebrows, man. He's got Ben Affleck eyebrow game. Sean, Kyle has just got comedy gold for us today. What is going on with this dude? Please now tell us.
Why do you have that, Kyle?
Yeah, please tell us why you have that.
Because it was one of about like 50 of them for his 50th birthday, like last year or the year before.
With friends like these, huh?
Where's your Heat jersey is a better question.
Next to my UConn jersey.
Oh, yeah. Can you put that Heat jersey on for us?
The Heat. Oh, yeah, the Heater. He got the same amount of rings this year that I have.
Yeah, exactly. So why aren't you proudly wearing that Heat jersey?
I don't have to wear it anymore. I just hold up my end of the bet, dude.
That was a weak bet. You need to get to Times Square with that Heat jersey. Not just wear it in Connecticut in your house. That's horse shit.
That was hilarious.
He needs to go on his next 10 no, site
I, wore, visit. I had on my story. I wore it one whole day in the city.
No, you did not.
Yes, I did.
On my story. Oh, how nice of you to make Jesus, a story.
You think I'm fucking crazy, bro?
Yeah, I do. I do. I thought you were crazy.
Clearly you have not been to Times Square.
You're all conservative over there in Connecticut. I thought you're all big old... Oh, East Coast, wild now, crazy Kyle. No.
Are you trying to pull my card right now?
He's trying to get you to go change into a Heat jersey right now while we're on air.
I'll change it into, you know, a fire. If you want, I'm not. Look, man, I made a bet with the guy on a day on a really bad. Don't bet based on emotion, they say, right? So there you go. I would love to have seen him wear that orange Knicks jersey in Miami.
Don't gamble on your team, man. Don't get high on your own supply. That's a good one.
I'm still trying to get over how you brought a Yeti cooler to Bulgaria.
I brought a Weber grill to Bulger. What's surprising about it?
Neither. And by the way, neither one of them are going to give you credit for their entrance into the market because of that effort.
No kidding.
Why? That's crazy.
Man.
No kidding.
You should control the franchise rights to Weber and Yeti in Eastern Europe. You're the guy.
What do they need a cooler for? They don't have any fucking ice.
You know, there's a Cambro facility in Bulgaria.
The what?
Cambro manufacturing facility.
Oh, what?
I'm telling you.
There's a Cambro manufacturing facility.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I tried to get a tour, but apparently it's not open to me.
What are you drinking there? What is that? Water? Oh, clearly.
Oh,
yeah,
you can't read that?
It's Nestjepa.
It's Pilerska.
Goes close. Sorry. Sorry to my Bulgarian people. There we go. That I can try and sound out.
Pilerska.
Oh, man. I could not get around out there. I speak German, and I know enough Spanish to get around a lot of cities. I remember going to Prague,
You
get into the Cyrillic. Cyrillic, is that what it's called? That alphabet? I'm fucking lost, man. Trying to find a hostel in Prague at 3 in the morning is not thing when you're trying to read street signs. It's like a hieroglyphics. All right, good stuff. I love this show. I love this episode. I don't think we've talked about restaurant stuff at all. Have we? Anything?
I don't remember. I'm just trying to figure out Zoom's new features.
Somebody in the comments, please help Kyle with his Zoom. Can we get some real-time troubleshooting on here? All right. Let's get some real talk. Guest experience presented by Ovation. Ovation is a 2-question survey platform for real-time feedback, better online reviews, and happier guests. Let's see what Zach has to say this week.
What's up, Restaurant Idea Factory? So I recently had on my podcast, Given Ovation, an incredible guy named Tim McIntyre. And he is a 37-year veteran of Domino's. He ended up as the EVP of Crisis Communications and PR. And he said a really interesting thing. So he said he goes around the country, and when he talks to restaurant owners, he asks them, out of 100 people, how many do you think, 100 people that complain, how many do you think are trying to screw you over? And usually people come back and be like, well, probably like one of them. And he goes, then why do we treat the 99 like the one? And I think that's such a fascinating concept, because we're so concerned about getting screwed over that we forget it's usually not the case that that's what they're trying to do. They actually have a problem. There's actually something wrong, which is why at Ovation, one of the things that we always say is when you get a guest complaint, the first time, be generous. Do more than make it even. The second time, be skeptical. The third time, you can just chat with them. Or if you really are bad, you can invite them to eat somewhere else. But the concept is, if you have a tool that enables you to keep track of who is complaining, how often they're complaining, then it doesn't matter how they order, where they order, what the issue is. And so my question to you is, what do you think about that? What do you think about the guest recovery process, and how do you avoid those consistent complainers?
Do we treat the 99 like the one, Sean? Let's zoom out, because I know that you don't. We talk about you hopping in your car and delivering barbecue because you guys forgot. Right, something on an order. So let's zoom outside of you. Do you see at large when you look at, you know, other Yelp pages, things like that? Do you feel like we're treating the 99 like the one?
I mean, it's human nature. I see it on all the platforms on the internet, but restaurants specifically, and Yelp is the perfect example of that. As restaurant owners, we all have been kicked in the nuts by Yelp, kicked in the nuts by the review, scared of the review, scared of the, you know, somebody writing something about our hard work, our blood, sweat, and tears. But ultimately, if you look, which is a great case study by Zach, is most people don't feel that way. I mean, most people don't even write a review. If it wasn't for Zach's platform, that's how we're getting more reviews, which is awesome for anybody that's using Ovation. But yeah, most people, it's not easy for them to write a review, which is why a tool like Ovation is great, because it allows them. People would love to write a review, but it's not possible for them to do it. What Zach's link does in a digital receipt on Toast, if somebody orders barbecue and they're heading out, would you like to write a review, or how was your experience? How was your experience? My experience was a happy face emoji. Happy face emoji. Would you like to write a review on Yelp, Google, or Facebook? And it's what Zach taught me, which is a deep link. A deep link is something that I'm very passionate about since Zach taught me. A deep link goes directly, logs you in to the platform of your choosing. So if I already have logged in and have a Yelp account and I want to write a Yelp review about Jensen's restaurant, Zach's platform is a deep link. It doesn't make me go and log in to Yelp or take me to outside of Yelp. So it's a so all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I wanted to write a review, but now I've got to log in. I don't know what my password is. Yep. I'm over it. No, it's a deep 100. Link. It goes immediately, write your stars, write your review. And because of that, you get more reviews.
Kyle, I think you need to be sending deep links to people on Zoom. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
I mean, it just sounds perverted.
Yeah, this is
sounds dirty.
The deep link is the way to be. Have you been paying attention? Have you seen an uptick in the amount of reviews that you're getting because of Ovation?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
on Yelp, on Facebook, and on Google. And we were very proactive before we had Ovation.
But that's exactly it. Nobody wants to log out and log back into something.
Yeah.
Say they will. Yeah.
I mean, my wife and I want to do it all the time and we forget to do it. Like we go out, we take pictures, we take videos. We're like, we want to write a review about this restaurant. And then we got to put the kids to sleep and to put the, you know, do the shower and put them to bed. And then by the time it's like next day comes and you've already forgotten to write the review for the local restaurant that you wanted to.
Yeah.
What's an example of another way to use like a deep links are used?
Other examples.
Justin on LinkedIn right here said, we love deep links. I try to use them whenever possible. Think of how many barriers
you there can you remove. Go.
Justin, help deep us links. Out. Where else? How else are you using deep links? Help our Zoom deficient homie here, Kyle, understand deep links a little bit more while we riff.
Kyle, essentially what Zach described to me is what engineers at Toast have explained to me about the problem with most technology is that it gives you a paper cut. That paper cut, like if you think of Amazon wanted one click to check out, and everyone told them you can't do it. But until you get to that point where there is just one click to buy something, now all of a sudden you're at a deep link state where it's like, remove the barriers for how hard is this to buy something? How hard is it to book an appointment? How hard is it to get confirmation of something that I've already booked? I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about with Zoom.
Yeah.
Your experience before was it was flawless, seamless. That's why I use Calendly and I use Zoom. It's because they're so easy. But if it makes you log out or it makes it difficult for somebody that, you know, is trying to book a meeting with you, now you're frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazon and then that meeting starts off definitely on the wrong foot. Justin says going from content into platforms is the way deep links are working. You could use link digital asset like a menu to a review. Mm-hmm. So I think that barrier is interesting. I don't know how you're making a different link, but I've definitely had emails where then there's a link to Facebook or different places, and then it takes me to the web version, the browser version on Safari on my phone to Facebook, and then asks me to log in. Yeah. How many times have I done that? Zero. I've done that zero times.
How many times do I want to log into Facebook? I'm like, I'm already logged into Facebook. Why am I on Safari?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're like, I already have the app. I have the app on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
That's annoying.
That's annoying.
That's what a deep link is. And that's what Zach was talking about. It's like, if you have that deep link, it's going to take you directly to the app and have where you're already logged in.
Yeah. And most of the links, like for social media specifically, are then deep links, if that's categorically what they're called, because it'll take you to the Facebook app. But anytime it doesn't, I'm kind of like, how the fuck did you do this? Like, this seems like you had to put effort to make it not take me to the app.
Yeah, correct.
Right. And then I'm done.
Yeah. Like, I can't think of what it is, which one it was, but it's like you get an email from them, like, whatever. Order this now, and you're like, okay, cool, I want to order it, but then it goes to the website, but you're like, I have the app.
That's it.
I have the app.
That's
very annoying.
Yeah. Then you go to the app, and the app they're not communicating, so it doesn't know why you open it. It's open on something totally different.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think to his question of, again, why are we treating the 99 like the one? There's always that fear. There's always the like, well, are they bullshit? Are they, you know, are they just Yelpers who are trying to, you know, goad us? Are they trying to get free stuff? So you go to that place first, almost always. And then you got to take a deep breath and like read between the lines, look at all of the reviews and try and find those patterns. And if you have more reviews, you have more opportunity to recognize those patterns. And you'll find that most people, even though you do not like Yelp, most people on Yelp are trying to give legitimate feedback. They don't know that Yelp has been predatory within the restaurant, pay to play to make sure that, you know, that they bury bad reviews, things like that. So they don't know that. They just say, oh, this is a great way to give restaurants feedback. Don't demonize them for wanting to give you feedback for utilizing a mass adoption mainstream platform. Cannot treat the 99 like the one.
No, and that's also, I think, about every, that's why there's somebody talks about this is like, you know, it when you when people like try to make things that like mountain out of molehill, essentially, like, right, they're gonna, oh my god, this is so bad, but like, no, you're not looking at the million good things, you're focused on this one little bad thing, right? Like, how you can just fix that quickly instead of dwell on it. That's something definitely restaurant owners get stuck on.
Yeah, to Sean's point, that's the human nature of it, right? And especially if it's so personal. Now, hey, if ChatGPT made that food, well, fuck it, you know, they're and Chef's like, well, they're right,
yeah,
it was a contrived Tampa spicy roll, whatever that might be. So, okay. So, Sean,
can you serve California rolls in Tampa? Is that a thing? Is that a Florida roll?
That's definitely a Florida roll.
Are they allowed to serve fake crab at all in Florida?
Oh my god, you guys seen that video on how they make the fake crab on TikTok? Oh my god.
No.
Not touching that shit ever again.
Really? No, thank you.
Yeah,
it's the, pull it up. Connie, it's so not good. I can't do it.
It's so bad.
That's what we should be watching. Let's put that on. I want to see that.
Yeah, let's just, can we just watch TikTok food videos as an episode? All right, Justin, thanks for getting down with us. Charles Wright, what do you have to say? I'm a big believer that you can beat the 1%. Give them what they want with a smile and send them on their way. Yeah, for sure. I think guest recovery, to Zach's point, is a big part of the game. I mean, I've mentioned how sometimes I secretly hoped we would make one or two small enough mistakes where we had the opportunity to recover that guest, because a lot of times people are expecting you to not care, to not pay attention to their needs or their complaints. And if you do, they become a bigger advocate than somebody that just had a good experience, right? And good is definitely the enemy of better quite often. So like that a lot. All right, Zach, appreciate you as there always.
Oh my god, let's see it.
Oh, is it just going through one of those big mashers?
Dude, it's like all soybeans and shit. And that red stuff is red dye number 7.
Oh, look at it, just shooting it. Yeah. Oh, man.
How horrific.
No.
Mm-mm-mm.
No more California rolls, bro.
Ever. I mean, that's not real Alaskan king crab in there?
What?
Look at this, red dye number 7.
Look at that. Oh, number 5, baby. On. Red dye number 5.
Is it 5 or 7?
Come on.
Maybe it's 7. Is it yellow 5? One of them.
Oh, come on. TikTok, why? Why did you ruin it?
It looks like sherbet.
It looks like gelato.
Oh, man.
Come on. That's terrible.
Dude, it's like going through hoses and shit. This is not okay.
No, you're getting hate mail from people. You're ruining a whole bunch of people's lives.
I'm fucking saving people's lives.
Oh my god.
You, it's even worse. The California roll is not even in California. It was invented in Vancouver.
What is that? What is that? Come on.
Obviously, that's crab.
Fake seafood. Jesus.
Terrible.
Look at it looks like a newspaper reel that's spitting out the Sunday Times.
Wait till you see.
Well, wait, there's more. Oh, now it's got the red stripe on the side. The orangish red stripe.
Now it's just.
There they are.
Oh, that's no good.
Just there you go, into a fucking bus tub.
No, that's no good.
Sean is fucking mortified over here.
No.
Sean, am I to understand that
leave it to California to make
California rolls and imitation crab?
I've had California rolls, of course. I've had California rolls.
Oh man, I couldn't do it anymore. I remember when we opened Tag Restaurant, we had the fake crab, and it lasted about a month before we're like, get this out of here. It's just,
yeah.
It's just
some people, they want it because they can't have real crab, but I guess I want that. Hey, you can find something else.
Yeah, you could find something else. It was always like, put enough spicy mayo on it, it'll be good. No, it's not good. Yeah. No, the texture is bizarro, all of it.
Oh, it's so
sorry.
Bad.
Sorry, everyone who's doing California rolls or rainbow rolls. It is just not good.
Not cream good. Cheese in sushi rolls.
Not good at all.
Oh God, it's horrific.
I just saw a TikTok video on that. Somebody's doing the hack where like a salmon roll costs like $8, but the Philly salmon roll, right, with the cream cheese in it, costs $12 or something. But then they just get the salmon roll with a side of cream cheese for another dollar. Like, people,
only in America, like,
oh, people are wild. The food hacks, and they're like, I did it, you guys. Fucking over 9,000. I've leveled up to the point where I got a Philly roll. Like, it's such an American thing, apparently, to be like, look, I hacked the system and I got a $12 roll for $9.
I hate those places, man. Oh, sorry.
You're welcome, world. What do you got? The Pleskava?
It's not your standard issue. American.
Pelisterka.
Cold Seagram's.
Pelisterka.
Pelisterka.
Yeah.
Dig it. All right. What are we getting into next here? Market Watch. All right. We got a couple things here. Flip Dish eyes profitability as it makes acquisition. This was from Charlie Taylor in Business Post. The Irish tech unicorn has acquired point of sale firm Ginobi and is rolling out what it calls a complete restaurant management system. This jumped out because acquisitions right now. You're seeing a lot of this happening. You're seeing big partnerships. You're seeing acquisitions. You're seeing mergers. You're seeing a lot of those strategic type things as these companies are recognizing this is a race to scale. Really, in a lot of ways, right? On the user side, as well as the end-to-end technology side. So there's a lot of companies that are recognizing that having just a pillar solution, a single vertical, is not going to be enough with the amount of integrations needed, with the amount of overlap in technology. So Flip Dish is making some moves into point of sale. And the other thing that jumped out here was just looking at the point of sale piece of this, where these point of sale companies are actually making their money is most of these point of sale companies are, in fact, credit card merchant processors, right? That have the point of sale as the piece of technology that's the conduit for that. But really, they're in the credit card processing game, which is the game that most people want to get into, which is where the real money is within this space. So what do we think about this specifically and just acquisitions at large? Kyle, what do you think when you see this?
I mean, just from my experience at the restaurant show, it's a crowded space, right? I mean, the consolidation is going to happen on some level, but ultimately, I think the best experience is gonna lead out. You know, Toast to me, hands down. I don't even think of another place. I mean, another POS provider. When somebody asks me, I think that's going to start to happen with, you know, these brands, particularly like Marquee and all these guys that we're fortunate enough to deal with. But I think all the other guys are scrambling to try to find a way to make it work because they see it coming. There's no way that there was so much tech there. And that's just, I mean, we know that there were like 900 names that we tried to reach out to. And that still wasn't, we were still finding new brands. So yeah. There's got to be some consolidation, particularly when restaurant owners are kind of like, what? You know, just when they hear words like integration and API, they're just like,
oh, the techno babble.
Like all that stuff, it just kind of goes over their head. So I think it's, simplifying it on that level would make a lot of sense in terms of all in one solutions. We'll see, I guess.
When I hear those like complete restaurant management system, end-to-end solution, those also are those techno babble. Those feel like VC words. Those feel like, Sean, they're on the deck. They're on the deck that gets you the VC money, which right now in restaurant tech, if you're in AI and robotics, you're still flush, right? They're playing a 10-year game, a 15-year game from now. A lot of other micro segments within the industry, the allure is wearing off of those being very viable single solution entities. So they're finding themselves out of necessity needing to find ways to not just integrate and have 10, 12, 15 different integrations. You need to own that whole pipeline. So What are you seeing in that space? What's happening in the CAB conversations? Are there conversations about those end-to-end solutions? Is Toast even there yet? They still have a lot of integrations. What's the direction there?
I mean, I think the power of Toast is that they understand their role in the space, and they have strong partnerships across so many different spaces within the restaurant space. I mean, we use so many. Our number one question for a technology that we're bringing into Cali Barbecue is, do you integrate with Toast? Mm-hmm. And how deep is that integration? Because if it's not deep, then we're not even going to waste our time with it. And if it is deep, then we want to find out, why is it deep, and why is Toast believe in that integration? And if they do believe in that integration, then what can we learn from the company, and what can we teach other restaurants about that integration? But I agree with Kyle. I mean, being at the National Restaurant Association show and seeing GoDaddy, a domain company, getting into the point of sale space is a joke. I mean, no offense to GoDaddy, but like, get serious. You know, that's, I mean, there is no conversation right now. You know, we know who the market leader is.
Yeah. And it's a race to get data, right? I mean, if you can,
of course, yeah,
that's what it is. But I mean, again, you still got to get into the restaurants. I mean, that's, I don't know. I think it's tough. It's tough to go against what I think Toast has established. And I think some of these other brands are just going to find it challenging to get into that space without, you know, providing that level of integration, that level of service. It's just going to be difficult. But
well, what'll happen is success. Probably a lot of what happens in tech usually, right? Toast will be the first one to the top of the mountain, right there, to the top of Mount Fuji here with end-to-end, whatever the hell that means. I don't even think Toast knows yet what end-to-end means. That's what they're working towards, what we're all trying to figure out. And then there'll be a couple other entities that get up there, and we'll have those 3, 4, 5 companies in any given space that dominate the space. And then what'll happen is Toast will be the first to become a monolith, right? And they'll struggle with the things that got them there. And then other small startups will basically build themselves into, we are not that. And that's that cyclical thing that happens in technology and services always, where it's like, you know, you die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. There's a lot of that happens in technology as well. So this will happen. This is why I talk about, like, right now I am, yes, every single technology should be considered, and many, many, many of them should be adopted, because we need to be able to test and innovate at scale as quickly as possible. Very quickly then, once we understand that, there's going to be a point where we're like, all right, stop. You need to really, really be thoughtful about the technology that you're bringing in, to a degree that we haven't been, because we have to shift our mindset of being such Luddites that we don't like the adoption of technology. There's going to be certain technologies that you're going to adopt 6 months, 9 months, a year from now, you're going to realize not the right solution. That was not necessarily a mistake to have that adoption. You just need to have a really good feedback loop to then, you know, hire slow and fire fast type mentality of, like, bring it on, test it, and be able to make decisions quickly on moving that out. Because if you wait till there's the perfect solutions, you're done. Like, just it's evolving too quickly, and you need to be in a different type of business model. So that's what
some,
I think.
Some of these groups may just be building things to, with the intention to be bought out by groups like Toast.
Oh, absolutely. Right? It's just like the Googles and Facebooks created this network of people going, that was like their business plan. That was their pitch deck. Get bought by Google within 3 years.
Right. Yeah, I'm not, like, at the restaurant show, I was fortunate enough to attend this dinner, very small. It's 25 Toast executives, and they're looking 10 years into the future. Like, this one guy, he doesn't even give a shit about what's going on right now.
He doesn't even know what's happening today.
No, he doesn't even know. That was 5 years ago that he was dealing with what's happening today. So they're ahead of the game. But, you know, them, Amazon, you know, all these groups, they're so into, they have departments built on finding out who the customer really is, what they really want, what the friction is in the market, well, how can we eliminate that? And I think, you know, to try to get ahead of machines like that, bro, that is tough. I mean, you're talking about like thousands of people whose job it is to stay ahead of the curve. That's not easy as a start of the
trade. That's why restaurants need to use ChatGPT. That's your think tank now.
For real.
ChatGPT has access to nearly as much information, you know? Mm-hmm. So, all right. Let's get into some sleep at night, presented by Davo. Davo automates sales tax payments and filings so restaurateurs can spend time on what actually makes them money and make TikTok content featuring ChatGPT. Let's hear what we're talking about with David Joseph today.
What is the accountant's role in your business? The accountant's role in the business is really to act as a bit of as an advisor, create a balance sheet, a P&L, and then every quarter, maybe every month, sit down with you and say, here's how your business is doing. And then at the end of the year, take all that, put it together into a tax return for you. What is not the accountant's job? The accountant's job is not to balance your checkbook, to make sure that payroll's getting done, to fill out your sales tax return and file and manage sales tax. They'll do that for you, but I can pretty much guarantee you that there's a junior person within that firm, like a bookkeeper, Rasi, R-A-S-I, R365, Big Fix out on the West Coast. These guys are restaurant specialists. They understand the restaurant business. They're great reputations. They know the nooks and crannies. They shine lights in the dark corners. Highly encourage you, use some automation. It is worth every penny.
Shine the light into the dark corners, Kyle. I'm sure you're having some anxiety. watching that. Accountants, their job and not their job. Do we understand it yet in restaurant what the hell accountants or a CPA or a bookkeeper is supposed to do within our business? I don't know that we do. Kyle, give me some feelings here before you give me thoughts when you think about accountants.
If I'm starting a business today, after I speak to the attorney, the next call is to an accountant to start getting that shit together, right? Like, why? If I have the money and everything, because I don't want it on my plate. I don't want to deal with it. I want to be able to do what I want to do and get people who do what they do. And obviously the money is, you know, sometimes when you're creative and you're driving this business and you're like, have your heart in it. It's hard to have your heart in it to that extent and be connected to the process of the money. You just want the architect there. I need this guy there. And then be like, am I good? Am I spending? Do I need to cut back do we have room here? That's how I would want to roll. I don't want to have to be the guy going and doing the ledger to figure out how much money I have left to spend. Just tell me what we can do. And it's a key from that day till whenever you close to make sure somebody's on top of that shit, because nobody gets into the restaurant business because they want to be an accountant.
How do you make sure though that you can have a quick process to audit that, to be able to make sure that that accountant is in fact doing their due diligence, what they're supposed to do, right? Because you have run into that. I think all three of us have mentioned stories of us running into not understanding what the accountant was actually doing and that getting us in trouble.
I think people get caught up on the expense. They're like, oh, I'm going to pay, you know, the Tommy, the local bookkeeper guy who works at restaurants, $1,500 a month to do what? All he's doing is running numbers. You know, restaurant owners get that stuck in their head. I would rather pay, you know, we switched from having this guy who screwed us up to immediately Cone Resnick. Major, huge accounting firm specialized in restaurants. They were night and day. It's $5,000 a month versus $1,500. But when you're trying to build something, you need what? I would rather pay the $5,000 than the $200,000, right? Like that's the situation we were in. So
yeah, and then for, you know, Rasi, R365, Quick Fix, I hadn't heard of. I guess out there on the West Coast, maybe, Sean, maybe you know of them. So are these firms, right, specialize in restaurants? How does that differentiate then from Joe Schmo, who's sitting at the corner of your bar, who's also an accountant? You know, what's the reasoning for going with one of those firms, which may cost you more than somebody who has the same quote unquote credentials, who's going to cost you a lot less?
I mean, I think everything has to be digital. I mean, that's, if we're not talking digital and we're talking finances, there's a huge problem. Mm. If you're not looking into a Rasi, a Restaurant 365, or something that integrates directly with your point of sale system, there's a huge problem because everything's moving digital. I mean, I don't even want to have cash payments at my restaurant. I don't even want to have a bank. I hate my bank. U.S. Foods, U.S. Bank, actually.
U.S. Banks, U.S. Foods, you're on blast.
No, U.S. Foods, I love U.S. Foods. They're our primary food vendor. U.S. Bank, actually, is the new bank. I guess I can give them a fair shake since they bought Union Bank. But banks haven't been great to restaurants. We all know that. Anyone that's a restaurant owner knows that. You know, I think there's a huge place for disruption in figuring out how do you make payments easier? How do you you know, we need weekly profit and loss statements. We need daily profit and loss statements. Mm-hmm. Daily, you know, on the hours, how is our restaurant doing? And once we get to there, we're going to have a much different conversation than what we do now, which is most restaurants, I would guess 90% of independents do monthly profit and loss statements. Monthly profit and loss statement will tell you nothing. I mean, I read Restaurant Startup and Growth magazine and Restaurant Owner for 4 years before we finally realized, like, we'll never run a profitable restaurant until we do weekly inventory, know what our prime cost numbers are, and have a weekly profit and loss statement. Like, we never will. So until we do that uncomfortable work, which totally sucks, doing weekly inventory and implementing, you know, financial accounting systems, until you do that work, you'll never figure this fucking game out.
No. Oh, man. And if anybody who's thinking of starting a restaurant, or maybe, you know, only has a couple of units and they're wondering how anybody, these big chains do it, dude, if you saw the amount of time and effort they spend on their monthly, weekly, daily report cards, you would understand why everything is so systematized and why they make so much money. Yeah. It's the only way to do it. It's the thing you got to, that's the one takeaway you can get from them.
Yeah, it's like you're training like an athlete, right? Like a millimeter, a second, a millisecond, all those things make a big difference when you're, you know, trying to win a match, trying to win a medal, trying to win a trophy. Whatever that might be, it's the same type of approach. You have to like really be thinking about seconds and pennies in that approach. You mentioned the inventory. So I do a lot of, and I say I, company does a lot of pre-opening business assessments and also existing business audits. And that's one of those high level questions that I'm trying to ask 3, 5, 6, 8 questions that help me understand kind of where they're at, really barometer as quickly as possible to kind of cut through the bullshit. And inventory is one of them. If people aren't doing weekly inventory, I can tell a lot about the operational downstream effect of a lot of decisions they probably make operationally. So yeah. And Sean, Kyle, like the amount of restaurants that are still not doing a weekly inventory to manage those numbers is staggering.
Well, the two things that came out of our relationship with Cone Resnick was inventory and what the hell are they called? And like when you purchase order, because the guy checking in, if you just tell them to check the order, they're going to check it against the invoice, but they're not checking against what you ordered. We found out we had commitments based on, I think it was like cases of tomatoes and cheese. Like, hey, we're going to commit to buying this much, so we're going to pay a flat fee for, they were overcharging us for like a year. It wound up being like $7,000 or $8,000. I remember that we found that they had to credit us back because those two things are. It's seemingly annoying for the staff. They're like, oh, I have stuff to do. I don't have time to check in this whole order, but it's got to be somebody's job to do that.
That baton handoff of order, like somebody needs to automate that process. Somebody needs to get AI and robots involved in that so that you can make sure that those orders coming in, because that's a big part. And then that product moves through your whole system. It takes up space. It takes up time, energy. It takes up money. Like, it has a compounding effect for sure on that process.
We had to put a scale at the delivery door because we would order 50 pounds of chopped meat and we'd get 45.
And and to your point, we didn't even order that meat though.
Yeah. Right?
Potentially, but it's on the invoice. So yeah, that's a key factor for sure. Chef scribbling down notes on the pad back there, calling in the order super quick at 4:45 before it's due, then that thing gets crumpled in the corner and tomorrow morning somebody else is taking in that order. That's huge issue. All right, last segment here, let's get into this. Let's talk a little, get real. Let's talk a little real estate. It's our real estate expert here. So this was around remote work, but it really turned out being about real estate. So this was from Joe over at Restaurant Business Online, how remote work has changed the restaurant business. Big city downtowns may never be the same, but smaller communities are booming, creating new opportunities for operators. According to data from pedestrian traffic researcher MRI Springboard, foot traffic in U.S. city downtowns was down 23% during January through May compared to the same period in 2019. So a lot of people aren't in those offices, and we're seeing massive 23%. That's a big number. It was, I think, the 2022 is at like 26 or 27%. So it was an improvement, but still massively down from 2019. You know, we've seen the video of you walking down downtown with Zelnick talking about what's happening down there. I saw the Raising Cane's. $1 million for the signage of Raising Cane's. Are you fucking kidding me? Holy shit, man.
The numbers are going to be insane.
So what's happening with those downtown corridors? Because there's so many fewer people on the foot traffic side, a lot of that having to do with people working remotely, not being in those high rises, in those business complexes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I can only speak to what's happening in New York, but I can tell you, not only are there less people there, but everybody, seemingly everybody who has the option to work from home or has a flexible schedule has chosen the middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right? Coming out of the weekend, they want to be home. Going into the weekend, they want to be home. They don't want to have to deal with the shit.
Makes sense. So
Mondays, which were dead typically for restaurants, that's why a lot of them were closed.
Ghost town. Couple weeks.
Closed Mondays. And now Tuesdays have become a very busy day. And Thursdays have become busy for like dinner reservations, going out stuff, because people are going out to the Hamptons or going down to the Jersey Shore. They're getting their last city fix before all that stuff. But it has shifted a lot of things and affects things like ordering, staffing, you know, everyone's availability, who, you know, they're typically, we can be light on Tuesdays, didn't care how, as to the fact that so many people couldn't work. Thursdays, similar dynamic. And weekends are, you know, around here, weekends now are in the summer are kind of quiet because everyone is going away. But that's why there is a push for a lot of these New York City brands to come out to the suburbs, because there are, you're not going to do the volume, right? $6 million restaurants will do $1.5, $2 million, but you're going to pay a third of the rent.
Yeah.
And you're going to have some regular consistent business, particularly if you're a lunch type concept. So it's definitely been a major, major impact. I don't think that, I would say not all have adjusted, less than probably 10%.
Do you see spaces being reallocated in different ways, cut up and chopped up into different size spaces, smaller units? Do you see anything like that happening? What are you seeing with some of the creativity with the spaces themselves? Anything happening there? Are they just staying vacant until there's some kind of bounce back and their tax write-offs for now?
No, in the city, everything is, if you can vent it, you can rent it. Doesn't matter what it is, what it was. In the suburb.
Hear that, Sean?
New York lingo. In the suburbs, though, a lot more red tape in these municipalities where you can't turn everything into a restaurant. You know, there's just not the density. You can't have a whole block be restaurants. And the zoning, this is, you know, you need, like my partner alluded to in our video that we posted today, you need somebody to sign off on it. And then who's going to pay for it? Is the landlord going to pay for the conversion? Are you going to pay for the conversion? Is the cost justified? There's a lot of that. But layer on top of that, just as an aside, we there's a moratorium on new gas lines and new gas connections. In fact, there are the companies, the utility company, Con Ed, is cutting off. If you own a building, and let's just say it's been vacant for 6 months to a year, they could very well have cut off the gas connection there. And now you have to go back and apply for the gas use that you need, and you may not get approved for what you had. So there's a lot of hurdles there. So even
So I heard like a lot of businesses are grandfathered in basically to whatever degree if they have that existing infrastructure, that they are not allowing new gas lines. But if they are currently not in use, to get them back into use, they're not grandfathered in because they have lines already.
There are spaces that are recently built out, beautiful spaces, instant. Built for the attention of being a Shake Shack, you know, whatever. They're there for that use. There's a hefty, you know, the large gas connection on the tenant side. They won't come out and make the connection, even if there's a restaurant next door. So they're just putting a line through next door from the main line up. Won't do it.
Ooh.
So yeah, there's a lot of hurdles when it comes to spaces right now.
Sean, what's your temperature on that? Going to that, you have the gas assist, Old Hickories. We give shout out to Old Hickory in 15 years, Granger Parts, all that. That was good to hear. But they're gas assist, and I know there's the same kind of moratoriums happening out there in California. What potential effects are you hoping you don't feel from that?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we're hoping that Old Hickory comes up with a solution for sure. But our plan is to build at one location, which is our master smokehouse, and then find non-traditional locations where we don't need hoods and we don't need vents and we don't need gas and we don't need any of that stuff. We just need distribution points for slow food fast. I mean, we're just not trying to build restaurants anymore. We're trying to get, you know, basically the barbecue Wow Bao model of what Jeff Alexander and the Wow Bao team were doing at NRA was insane. I mean, they have vending machines, they have stadium locations, college campuses, they have dark kitchens, they're in CPG products. I mean, they're phenomenal. What they're building is awesome. And that's what we're trying to do for barbecue. And, you know, hopefully California, we love our state, but our state makes it very hard to do business in every single year. And we'll continue to figure out ways. We figured it out for 15 years. We'll figure it out for another 15 or 45 or whatever it takes.
Keep the barbecue cooking. Keep the smoker going. I like it. All right. Great episode. This is good. I think about half the episode, we actually gave you actionable, valuable information about restaurants. You know, the rest was about Zoom and
and not having ice in Eastern Europe.
Not having ice in the Miami heat. So I like it. I like it a lot. All right, everybody. As always, please get into the comments. Let us know what else we need to be talking about. Share any links with us. Follow on social media. Check out everything that's happening on those platforms. And let us know what you need us to riff on. That's it for this episode. Good show, guys.
Later, guys.
Let's call it. Cheers.
Peace.
Subscribe to full episodes Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn.